episode 90.
90, wow.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
This is Anna.
This is Shireen.
And this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we're going to talk about this for the whole episode.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Are you excited?
Bet your booty.
Are you excited?
I bet your booty.
I bet your booty I'm excited.
I bet your booty too.
Okay.
Okay, you guys.
Sorry. We actually are not going to talk about
that. Could you imagine the hellstorm that would arise?
We should have done that on April Fool's Day or something. That would have been funny.
For your birthday?
Yeah, who cares?
So today Shireen and I are going to cover one topic, and it's how the Kushners got money out of Qatar to pay for their stupid-ass devil building.
It is complicated, but so necessary, so please stay tuned and pay attention. And we also get into some listener emails and reviews, so...
And we answer someone's question they emailed us in.
Yeah, and it's a good discussion, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Wow. Hi. I believe this is episode 90.
No.
Yeah, because it was
80. Oh yeah.
Guys, we're all over the place.
This is episode 90.
Yeah.
Wow. We were both born in 1990.
I was born in 76. I'm incredibly old.
Wow. I can't believe we're almost to 100. That's crazy. I mean, like, we technically already have more than 100 episodes counting our bonus eps, but as far as our Monday eps, we're almost to 100.
Yeah.
That's wild, man.
Yeah. Whatever. So, this is funny. So, we're recording this a little ahead of schedule because we're both going out of town for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are prepping. We're recording three episodes today.
We're recording three episodes today just for you. We are committed to the cause. We are committed to the pod and our pod fam. We do this for you.
We do it and we're new. The episode we're recording after this is going to be a wild ride for y'all. We're super excited for it.
The one that we record after this is going to come out before this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, we can just say what it is then, right?
Well, if you're hearing this, you already heard our Reza Aslan interview.
Yeah. He's coming in after this episode that we're recording right now, and I am so excited. He is very nice. I brought the book that my mom gave me.
To have him sign it.
Well, he already she bought a version that was already signed by him. Oh. Like there was like one of the editions, I guess.
Interesting.
But I want him to sign it in real life. You know,
not just, not like just like a stamp.
Yeah. But I brought it and I already told him that my mom's obsessed with him, so he already knows. But just reminding. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you guys have been following us from our YouTube days, you know that we are both obsessed with Reza Aslan and what he does for not only the Muslim and Arab community, but just like people of color and being like a scholar, and what he does is really important. He's a really intelligent, brilliant man.
I think No God But God was the first book I read when I was like 15 or 16 that like opened my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I read books other than that, but...
But I know what you mean.
They weren't exciting.
The way he dissects and like discusses information is really palatable and like really easy to understand. He doesn't make it like so lofty and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate what he does when he's like brought on like on a new segment or whatever. He speaks his mind. He is so amazing. I met him, previous guest to our show, Sophia Alexandra, had a birthday. And he happened to be at that birthday.
Well, yeah. So what I saw is I saw that they had him on the Reality Bites podcast.
Right. Yeah.
And I like was like, Shireen, we have to get in. We have to find out. And then I harassed text Sophia being like, get us in. And she was like, okay.
And then she was like, he's going to be at my birthday. Come through. But Anna, unfortunately, was out of town that weekend. So I ended up going by myself. But I met him and his amazing, lovely
wife. Yeah, we sent you
wife.
With one goal, to get him.
Yeah, and I accomplished that mission. But his wife is amazing. His children are adorable. He has three kids that are so cute. And he's just an amazing guy. And so at that party, I introduced myself. I took a video for my mom that she still plays all the time. That was just like, hi, this is... Hi, Shireen's mom. That's what he was saying.
Nice.
But...
I have to get one, do one for my dad.
I know.
My mom doesn't care about anyone.
Oh, really?
I don't know. She's just not interested in anybody. She's just not amused by it. No one impresses her. Like, the only person that impresses her is God. Probably, like, Muhammad.
Oh, wow.
That's it. No famous people impress my mom.
That's a true devout Muslim.
Like, she's like, oh, cool, you act, yeah. Whatever. Have you heard of God?
Yeah, I'm excited to have him on the pod. I don't know. It's cool. Because I feel like when we did our YouTube show, none of us expected that, like... Well, when we did a Reza Aslan episode, he did retweet us. That was, like, a huge deal for us.
Yeah, he tweeted us out.
That was like, oh, my God, he knows we exist.
Oh, my God, he knows we exist!
And now he's going to come on our show. I think it's really cool.
What if he kills us?
He's going to come.
You wouldn't... Would you hear this episode if he killed us? You would, because it's...
You would, because we already recorded.
That is so thrilling.
He's not going to kill us. Don't say that.
Oh, God, I love him so much.
Yeah. But, yeah, I feel like for our show, it's a cool... especially special guest because it's him and it was someone that we really loved even before we had a podcast. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how freaked out we were when he tweeted at us? I remember we were like sending each other screenshots. We were like, is this real? Mm-hmm. Like, and now he's going to be on our fucking show. It's so cool. I'm proud of us, man.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was internally burping. Woo! All right, well, today we're going to cover one topic that's like an expansive topic, and it's all about the Kushners.
Getting that Kush.
The Kushners and their bullshit ass bullshit and how they should all be in jail.
Yeah. Who are the Kushners? Should we explain it to people that don't know?
If you don't know who the Kushners are, like, what are you even doing? Just joking. So,
I mean, I probably didn't know who they are until Trump became president. Like, I knew of them, but I just didn't know that much in depth about their fucking life.
Okay, so Jared Kushner, he's the son of Charles Kushner, who basically they're just like white rich people. But to give you more context, so Charles Kushner, he's an American real estate developer. I believe he owns Kushner Companies or something like that.
Yeah.
And Jared Kushner is his son. He's married to Ivanka Trump. Mm-hmm. He's like an American investor, real estate developer.
He's just a rich kid's. He's just a rich guy's kid.
And basically. Now he's a senior advisor to Donald Trump, who is president of our country.
So they definitely gained more attention after Trump became president, and the first daughter was married to this guy Kushner, and everyone's like, okay, what is this guy's deal?
My favorite thing is that Charles Kushner, in 2005, went to jail because he was convicted of illegal campaign contributions, tax evasion, and witness tampering.
Mm-hmm.
And he served 14 months in federal prison and then resumed his career in real estate after he got out.
Like a fucking white man.
Untouched. As you do. 14 months and then free, baby. I'll get into more detail about another thing, or like one of the things he did, which is so fucked up.
We have people of color in jail for like having an ounce of weed. For like years, and then we have this guy just like bouncing back. It just infuriates me.
That's what they do. That's what white people do.
Yeah.
So back in 2008, not that long ago, last year in May,
you said
2018. You're right. 2008, not that long ago. 2018, long time ago. So Charles Kushner, he sat down with CNN and he started talking about his decision to buy the building 666 Fifth Avenue.
If that wasn't indicative of something shady going on, what else is 666 Fifth? And I love 666, but in this case, it's a sign of a black flag.
So this building, it's a Midtown tower. This building has become basically the worst thing to ever happen to the Kushners. So apparently Charles Kushner pushed Jared to make the purchase. That's what he told CNN. And Jared was the de facto CEO of Kushner Companies at the time because his father was making wallets at a prison camp in Alabama where he was serving time for what I told you before. And among other things, setting up his brother-in-law with a prostitute, taping the encounter and sending it to his sister in retaliation for turning in state's evidence.
That is some fucked up shit.
Yeah. So his brother-in-law flipped on him. So he fucked his relationship up.
Just to reiterate, he set up his brother-in-law with a prostitute, videotaped the encounter, and sent it to his sister, who was married to his brother-in-law, because they had turned on him. So a little history about the building. So they bought this office tower that sits between 52nd and 53rd Street over 11 years ago for a record-setting $1.8 billion. But today, that building only generates about half its annual mortgage payment, and only 30% of the 41-story tower is, and about 30% of the 41-story tower is completely vacant because the top tenants left, and that made their income plummet a lot. And since then, they've been searching the globe, literally all around the world, for a partner in this building because they are tanking because of it. And I think this deal, or this inquiry for a partner raised concerns, especially because, as we said, Jared Kushner has a dual role as a White House point person on the Middle East and a continuing stakeholder in his family's company, which should already be a clear conflict of interest, but we're just sitting here like dumb fucking ducks.
I want to give a little bit more history on the actual building. So the building that they bought, it only generated enough cash to pay 2/3 of their annual debt payments because they took out like $1.6 billion or something in loans. And they were like hoping on a quick turnaround and like a big jump in rents. And they sold its retail space for $525 million. But of course, office rents, were non-existent during the recession. So they were forced to restructure their loans, and they sold 49.5% of the building's office space to this company called Vornado Realty Trust.
Sounds like a fake company, but okay.
Yeah, and that company gave the Kushners an $80 million high interest loan. They're deep in some shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I forgot to mention that when they did buy it in 2007, they bought it with a partner, and they borrowed from this partner $1.75 billion for the purchase.
So yeah, that's what I just said.
You did?
Yeah. I said 1.6, but...
Oh. But I think when that partner bowed out, they were in very much like, oh, we're in deep shit because we owe a bunch of this money. And so since then, it's been over a decade, and they've been losing money throughout this whole time.
Yeah, so now as of then, $1.9 billion was due in 2019 to pay back.
Yeah.
So a Chinese holding company, they almost bought it. The Charles Kushner, he told CNN that Kushner Companies takes pains to avoid even the perception of a conflict of interest. The firm's lawyer reminds dealmakers weekly of the company's self-imposed ban on financing from foreign governments, Asim Al-Thani, and that meeting turned out to be a mistake because, like I said, they don't do business with foreign governments. He called himself stupid to meet with him, and he accepted the invite purely out of respect for the Qataris to tell them that there would be no way that they could do business. Which
bullshit.
Yeah.
And then the following month, Kushner and the White House supported a blockade of Qatar, organized by Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And due to the crisis, the alliances in the region have shifted, obviously, with Qatar. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past. And Qatar also holds the largest U.S. military base in the entire Middle East and aligns more closely with Iran and Turkey. So there's a lot of stake in Qatar that isn't really talked about in U.S. media, but should be, especially with this fledgling deal that Kushner has going on. So even though, as Anna mentioned, Charles Kushner said it was stupid of him, quote unquote, to meet with this Qatari billionaire in 2017, saying that there was no way they can do business, apparently it's okay to get money from a company that isn't Qatari per se, but has extensive ties to Qatar, and that's completely okay. Apparently, Kushner is in advanced talks with Brookfield Properties over a partnership to take control of the 41-story aluminum-clad tower, 666 Fifth Avenue, which is, again, in Midtown. And this is according to two real estate executives who have been briefed on the pending deal but are not authorized to discuss it just yet. Brookfield is a publicly traded company headquartered in Canada, one of those whose major investors is the Qatar Investment Authority. So this Qatar Investment Authority is the sovereign fund of the oil-rich Middle Eastern country of Qatar. However, despite their denial of being involved in the deal, when we investigate this company further, we have evidence that it has extensive ties to Qatar, because it's so the Qatar Investment Authority is the second largest shareholder in the Brookfield properties, ranking only behind Brookfield's former parent company. And the Qatar Fund and the Brookfield and Brookfield have teamed up on several real estate deals in the United States and elsewhere in recent recent years, including a lot of buildings in Manhattan and also in London.
Yeah, so the QIA, Qatar Investment Authority, they're the world's largest sovereign funds with $320 billion in assets under management, and that's according to the Sovereign Wealth Fund Institute. And in 2015, the fund announced plans to invest $35 billion in the United States, and since it has become a sizable commercial real estate investor in it, taking part in roughly $7 billion in real estate deals and buying up properties all around the world, which is according to CoStar Group, which is a real estate research firm. So, yeah, like Shereen was saying earlier, the deal is raising concerns because Jared Kushner is a White House person, and the Middle East and him shouldn't be working together. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. He's also a stakeholder in his family's company. And in February of last year, Kushner lost his top secret security clearance because they were concerned that foreign governments could attempt to gain influence in the White House by doing business with his firm, which they have been doing. And the Times reported that his firm last year received a $30 million investment from Menora Mivtachim, which is a large Israeli insurer. And that was just days before Jared Kushner flew to Israel for his first diplomatic trip to the region. So there's already concerns that he is out here being incredibly sketchy and conflict of interest up the asshole.
Yeah. And if that's not clear of his, like, I don't know, clearly it's a conflict of interest to be this point person for the Middle East and I don't know, still having any stake in your parents' company. But apparently even though he resigned as chief executive of the family's company when he joined the White House staff in January 2017, he still retained most of his stake in the firm. And he shed some of the assets, including his stake in 666 Fifth Avenue, by selling them to a trust controlled by his mother. And so it's still very much in the family. And his real estate holdings and other investments are worth as much as $761 million, according to the government ethics filings.
Yeah, and so this Qatar's newfound interest toward the Kushner family is kind of curious because of a long-standing speculation about Jared's personal alliances with Mohammed bin Salman and Mohammed bin Zayed, who are the crown princes of Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi, respectively. And some political observers raised eyebrows when, just a few weeks after Charlie Kushner's talks with the Qataris fell apart, his son endorsed a Saudi and United Arab Emirates-led blockade of Qatar. Mm-hmm. So at the time, they were wondering if the Trump administration would continue to support the blockade or whether it would suddenly have a change of heart now that the QIA via Brookfield had opened its wallet. And the blockade eventually came down. And also back in the day, well, not really back in the day, in 2017, the Kushner company directly solicited investment from the Qatari finance minister Al-Sharif Al-Imadi for its 666 Fifth Avenue tower. But according to sources, the deal didn't happen. So that's kind of like another weird thing that was out there. And then when news emerged that Qatar may have unwittingly helped bail out the family, people were kind of like, weird in Doha. Like, that's interesting.
We're going to talk more about this kind of convoluted situation. I hope you guys are keeping up. There's a lot of information, and a lot of it is just like financial talk, but we'll get more in depth after the break. And we're back. Okay. So Anna, when we, before the commercial break, she started talking about Doha. And Doha is the capital of Qatar. And when news emerged that Qatar may have helped with the bailout, Anna was saying that this raised some eyebrows, which is a funny phrase for Arabs, for me. The bailout, which Doha played no part in apparently, was first learned about in the media and has prompted a rethink of how the gas-rich kingdom of Qatar invests money abroad via its giant sovereign wealth fund, the QIA. The country has decided that the Qatar Investment Authority, the QIA, will aim to avoid putting money in funds or other investment vehicles that it does not have full control over, according to these sources. And these sources are apparently familiar with the QIA's strategy. And this was told to Reuters like a year ago, I believe.
The one of the sources said Qatar started looking into how its name got involved into the deal and found out it was because of a fund it co-owned. So QIA ultimately triggered a strategy revamp. So in addition to likely having had the chance to hear about the deal through Brookfield directly or read about it in the paper or something, they're saying like that one would imagine the Qataris were keeping tabs on all things Kushner on account that Jared's father took a meeting with Qatar's finance minister, Al-Sharif Al-Ahmadi, which I mentioned earlier, which, of course, you know, Kushner was like, the older Kushner said, I took it out of respect. So they don't really know why is Doha like trying to go out of their way to insist it accidentally bailed out the Kushners. So I guess we'll find out one day. Who knows?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to cover their tracks. I mean, like denying is like the most basic form of not taking responsibility. And there is definitely a conflict of interest here. So I think if they admitted that they did have a huge part in the bailout, they would be in more trouble than good.
Well, do you think they're just trying to cover up for the fact that they clearly were like blackmailed?
Yeah, there's also that. And regardless of conflict of interest, the U.S. does have a lot of power in the Middle East and otherwise.
Do you want to, now we can give some history on that blockade that we would talk about?
Yeah.
On past episodes. So just to break it down again. So Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, they had launched a military operation against Qatar at the beginning of the diplomatic crisis that erupted in like June last year, but was stopped by former U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in a act that may have, what they say, played a role in his dismissal. And according to the investigative news site, The Intercept, the plan involved Saudi troops crossing the land border into Qatar with the military support with UAE, advancing 100 kilometers inland and seizing the Qatari capital of Doha. So I don't know why I said it that way. Based on the information it said it received from current member of the U.S. intelligence community and former Department of State officials, The Intercept said the coup, which was largely devised by Saudi Arabia and UAE's crown princes, was likely some weeks away from being implemented.
Yeah, and it said that the attack against Qatar's prince, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, would have involved Saudi forces circumventing the air base, which is the home of the U.S. Air Force Central Command and some 10,000 American troops. And this air base is called Al Udayd Air Base. It serves as one of the U.S.'s most important overseas military bases, and it carries out operations throughout the Middle East. However, after Tillerson was notified of the plan by Qatari intelligence officials, he reportedly urged Saudi Arabia's King Salman not to carry out the attack, and also encouraged the defense secretary, James Mathis, at the time, to explain the dangers of such an invasion to his counterparts in the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pressure from Tillerson, it caused Mohammed bin Salman to back down, because they were concerned that the invasion would damage Saudi Arabia's long-term relationship with the U.S. However, Tillerson's intervention reportedly enraged Mohammed bin Zayed, who is the crown prince of Abu Dhabi and the de facto ruler of UAE. And that led to the subsequent lobbying of the White House for Tillerson to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And Mohammed bin Zayed, he's had a long-running rivalry with Qatar, and he supported a failed coup against the Qatari government in 1996 when he served as chief of staff of the UAE Armed Forces. The Intercept said none of the current or former officials interviewed by The Intercept have direct insight into why Trump decided to fire Tillerson. But one source said that the timing a week before the Saudi crown prince arrived in Washington for a much publicized visit was very significant. And Tillerson, who was a former executive for the energy company Exxon, had repeatedly criticized the blockade the blockading of the countries for the crisis before his dismissal. And anyway, and basically accused them of heightening tensions for their own fucking bullshit. So at the time, he said, there seems to be a real unwillingness on the part of some of the parties to want to engage. It's up to the leadership of the quartet when they want to engage with Qatar, because Qatar has been very clear they're ready to engage. So he was,
yeah,
he was the one who was there trying to be like, this is a bad idea. Yeah. We should not cause problems just to cause problems. And yeah, he hasn't given any interviews since he was replaced by Mike Pompeo. And yeah, you know, he was known to have disagreed on a number of issues with Trump, including the blockade of Qatar, if that wasn't clear.
Oil boy Rexy Tillerson. And according to one news report, Tillerson was frustrated with Trump for endorsing the blockade, with his aides suspecting that a line in the president's speech where Qatar was accused of funding terrorism at a, quote, very high level, had been written by UAE's ambassador Youssef El Otaiba. And Otaiba is a well-known figure in the U.S. national security circles, and according to Politico, he maintains, quote, an almost constant phone and email contact with Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner. Wow! The Intercept also reported that four of the sources interviewed pointed to an ongoing campaign by the UAE to try and provoke Qatar into escalating the crisis. However, the UAE has made it illegal for people to express sympathy for Qatar on social media, which is a clear sign of a tyranny.
Yeah.
Basically, well wishes for Qatar, like anything on social media, it was illegal in the Emirates. Yeah. Meanwhile, Emirate officials with close links to its leadership repeatedly hurl insults against Qatari women. So when, I guess, you work for the Emirates, it's different. Those rules don't apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia, the UAE, along with Egypt and Bahrain, severed diplomatic trade links with Qatar on June 5th of last year, and they accused Doha of supporting, quote, extremism and terrorism and cozying up to Iran. Qatar has on all counts denied these allegations, and the quartet of these countries subsequently ordered Qatari nationals to leave their countries and also urged their citizens to return to their respective nations, disrupting the lives of thousands in the region and restricting the freedom of their movement.
Yeah, and according to several media reports, the four countries want Qatar to join a regional alliance against Iran and normalize relationships with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Qatar has denounced all these attempts to infringe on the Gulf nation's sovereignty and rejected all of their demands because this is bullshit.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, I mean, it makes all the sense because everyone's corrupt, but they got their fucking money, and that's probably why you don't hear anything about mm-hmm. Qatar. Like, Qatar's like, oh, thank God, we gave all this money to fucking Jared Kushner, and now they leave us alone. And it's like, it's so fucked up, like, how he went about that. Like, I genuinely believe Jared Kushner should be in jail. Ivanka should be in jail. They should all be indicted for the bullshit that they're involved in.
Yeah. And I think it's just so disgusting that this small Arab country is just, like, being manipulated by this giant U.S. country. Like, there's no reason for it.
Like a little weasel-faced boy.
Yeah, there's no reason for it. Like, it's just they're playing games with us constantly. And maybe I'm like, I saw Vice kind of recently for the first time, and it just enrages me how the U.S. has repeatedly used Arab countries and just a smaller country in general to just manipulate and use for its benefit. And like, I was really surprised. I mean, like, way to go Rex Tillerson. Like, who knew he would be like this, like, in defense of the small nation? But someone
hashtag
had to be
oil boy.
Yeah, hashtag oil boy Rexy Till. But no, it's really frustrating because I mean, I know a lot of this article was kind of dense, and or like this episode is like kind of dense and like a lot of financial jargon, but that's also the point. Like, not a lot of people care enough to learn about it because it's like not interesting. There's just like financial talk or loans and whatever. But I think that that's also part of why it goes unnoticed, is because it's not interesting on the surface level.
But that's,
you know,
the fucked up part. It's like, it's so fucked up.
Yeah.
It's like very dark shit. Like, you should not be getting your money from this country after you put them through that. Like, mm-hmm. there is something so deranged where, like, oh, yeah, so deals didn't work out with my dad to invest in our building that we're underwater in because we made a fucking poor decision.
Mm-hmm.
So this country has to pay for it or we'll send Saudi Arabia after them. It's like, this is not your world. Sit your ass back. Like, you don't get to be like little weasel idiot boy trying to deal with all your shit. Like, I genuinely hope Jared Kushner ends up in jail and he is like ass raped. I'm sorry. He deserves it. Okay. What he did with this, like, I can't, it's the grossest thing I've ever heard. I hate it. I can't stand that he went to and like used this Middle Eastern country to take money from them to deal with his own shit. It's the most white privilege ass bullshit I've ever heard of. Like, who does that?
No.
Who does that? Who made you think that's okay? That's the problem. Charles Kushner should be in jail for the rest of his life. All these people should be in jail for the rest of their life for raising their children to believe that's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's especially interesting when you think of, even before they kind of forced Qatar to bail them out, they reached out to another country that's like a foreign country with that they can just thought they could manipulate because they're not like a white country, but they reached out to China. And in 2017, it looked like this Chinese holding company called Enbag Insurance Group that had ties to the Chinese government. It looked like they might help them get out of the situation and might bite and become their partner. But they backed out when the heat on Jared Kushner, who was suddenly a West Wing advisor, got too hot.
Yeah, because they knew. They're like, oh, we can't fuck with that.
Yeah.
That's a conflict of interest.
But these fucking white men... I mean, like, okay, I know it's not all white men. Don't come at me. But it's really, like, they just think they can use others to their benefit. And obviously, they've been successful. And they keep fucking doing it. And it really enrages me because...
It's bullshit.
Because they don't get the justice that's necessary. They don't get punished. It's just upsetting that we have, like, I don't know.
It is upsetting.
Because the prisons are filled with people that, like, of, like the majority of people of color. And they should be filled with people like this that are, like, rich.
And they shouldn't just go to, like, white-collar prison. They should go to, like,
they should real go to prison.
They shouldn't go to, like, tennis prison.
Making wallets? Like, shit. Like, fuck you, dude. Like, he was literally making wallets.
Well, they do that in real prison, too.
In prison camp? I don't know. I just think that's fucking bullshit.
Anyway, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. And we are back.
We're back.
I hope you guys made that Kushner segment made sense. Sorry, we were kind of like rushing through it.
I don't know why, because there's so much going on.
But read the articles that we're going to put in our footnotes in the description.
Yeah, because, please do.
Because they are good and you should know what's going on. For the rest of this episode, we want to take a chill little moment to read some reviews and an email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a review from username Noble Truth. Amazing. 5 stars. 5 stars, no less, for this awesome podcast. From news to mental health and beyond, they will make you laugh, cry, and question the world we are living in. That's so nice.
See? That's it?
Brief, succinct, 5 stars, no less. That's all you gotta do. Like, 1-2 sentences. That's all we need, man. That's all we need.
Yeah, leave a review. We'll read it. Like, isn't that what you all want?
Yeah.
And this, first to read.
And there's another really short review from Fan of Harry. It's the subject line is thought-provoking and fun. 5 stars, of course. A podcast that is both thought-provoking and fun. Great log interviews with very interesting people. That's all we need. Just a little sentence or two and 5 stars. Go do it now. Do it now. Please. Please.
Ooh. Who's leaving these short reviews?
The great fans. Great fans.
Wow. I didn't know we had fans.
Yeah, we have listeners and we have fans and we have supporters and they're all great. We guessed it on Yo, This Is Racist again.
Oh yeah, we're back on that. Yeah. I don't know when that comes out though.
I don't know when it comes out, but it did get me thinking about some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an email that a woman sent us back in like I don't know, like mid-March that we I never read out loud and I haven't responded to yet because I've been really busy. We both been really busy. But I think it would be cool to talk about it on the podcast.
Okay.
And talk about her question. So I'm going to read it and then we can discuss it. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Liz says, "Hello, ladies. Love the podcast. I wasn't sure if you were interested in listener questions, but I encountered a professional situation today and thought you two would have some opinions on it. So I'm a whitey. I'm also a director, and today I received an offer to work on this play wherein all the characters are Persian American. This play was initially brought to me because there is a queer element to it, and I'm a queer director. But the biggest conflict in the script deals with liberal young adults struggling against their strictly religious Muslim parents. The script doesn't really go too far into the specific Muslim teachings. It's more of a general liberal kids versus conservative parents situation, which is a pretty universal theme that everyone can relate to. My thing is, I feel like it's not my place to tell this kind of story. What happens when I get a whole cast of Middle Eastern American actors in a room and I have to stand there and explain to them what all these Farsi words mean? It's not that I couldn't do it. I just feel like it would be like, quote, who the fuck is this white bitch? Does this white bitch think she is? Kind of situation. But then on the other hand, what if I don't do the project and then some white man comes along and snatches it up and ruins everything like white men usually do?" Snap to that. Or even worse, what if I pass on this project and they can't find anyone else to do it and it just never gets produced? Mm. In the end, I actually don't think I can direct this play because of scheduling conflicts, but I thought it might be a good thing to talk about. As an artist, at what point should one have enough self-awareness to step back and say, someone else should tell the story? Keep up the good work, Liz."
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did she say she would be explaining what the Farsi words meant?
Yeah, she just like was imagining like trying to direct these actors and like having to explain what like you're Persian here.
Oh boy, that is tough. I wouldn't. You know, that's a shitty situation to be in. Like, I guess I need more details. Like, who's put this on?
I mean, I don't think it's a shitty situation. I think it's an interesting situation to be aware of. I'm really glad that you had the self-awareness. I'm talking to the listener now. I'm glad that she has the self-awareness to realize that even though she is a marginalized person being queer, she might not be marginalized in the way that is best serving this story. But there is, you do say that there is a queer character, or a queer element, rather. So maybe that's why they even chose you. Right?
Yeah. I guess.
But I mean, I do think I understand where you're coming from. Maybe the best, I feel like the best situation in this case would be to find a co-director. Because you're like, you don't want to, I don't think backing out of the project serves anybody. Because you're right. What if it never gets made? What if someone else makes it worse because they're like not marginalized at all?
Or aren't self-aware.
Yeah, exactly. At the very least, you sound like an intelligent, self-aware person. And that's eons ahead of a lot of people. And you're a woman, which is like, we gotta fucking work. Like, women directors, come on, man. Like, as another queer woman director, getting offered a job is like few and far between. So I understand how conflicted that must feel to turn down something that obviously sounds like a cool project, in my opinion. But if, I mean, like, I don't know if you already turned it down or not, because this was a couple weeks ago. But I think there is a certain point where someone should have enough self-awareness to step back and say, could someone else tell the story? Like, we've talked about that a lot with, like, Lena Dunham, or even actresses accepting roles like Scarlett Johansson or other roles that aren't meant for them. But in this situation for a play, at the very least, if you don't feel comfortable directing a cast of Middle Eastern American actors in a room and explain to them like what, like Farsi the traditions or like words or whatever, then bring on someone that is Persian American and have them be a part of the creative process,
or even like make it more of a collaborative effort with your actors.
Yeah,
because clearly they're of the culture, so you might as well work with them. Be like, I want this to make this an open dialogue where it's not just me telling you the situation, it's all of us working together to make this work because you guys are coming from your own personal experiences.
Yeah. And I mean, the hope is that the people that get cast are Persian American or at least like Middle Eastern, so they can draw from their own experiences and you guys can collaborate on that. I'm interested in who wrote it, obviously, if they are also Persian American, because you say that the play, the characters are all Persian American, but I wonder if the writer is, and if they are, then they can help you, you know?
I'm assuming if they're still around.
Right.
I don't know. I wonder what the play is.
But yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, I'm just glad that someone is self-aware enough to like even think about that stuff. And that never I feel like it never happens when you're like a big time person like Lena Dunham. Like you just, it goes way over your head. But yeah. Yeah. And maybe because she's queer, she realizes like how it feels to be unrepresented. Maybe, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go.
I mean, ideally, I wouldn't give it up, because if there's no one, like if you would beat out an Iranian American for the role, then I'd be like, yeah, you gotta step down. But if there's like no one else they were considering and it's just you,
like you must have work that impresses them or something. Or
yeah, you. And I guess you do have, you know, you're there, and if you fear it might not be made if you don't work on it, or you'll be replaced by a white guy, then you might as well just try and take on the challenge, and maybe you'll learn a lot. They'll learn. Everyone will learn from it, and maybe even just like, yeah, like bring on someone, see who else is out there. Just do your research. Like,
yeah.
Learn from your
peers,
actors.
Yeah.
You know, be open to advice and critiques from them of like how something would go in a normal Persian American household or situation, like how we act or how they act, you know. Just be open to it, to collaborate.
Yeah. And you're saying the play was initially brought to you because there is a queer element. So you do have something to offer to the table. And again, like you say that you probably can't do it because of scheduling conflicts. And this was like a month ago. So maybe this advice is outdated. But in the future, I think for anybody listening, this is good to think about. Like when you're presented a project that you're not directly have knowledge about, or it's not your experience, like at what point do you step back or do you take it on? And I think the ultimate thing is just having enough self-awareness to identify where that line is.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
it's awkward. It's awkward when you're like, I don't want to take jobs away from people and direct and write and produce other people's stories, but sometimes you're just kind of in that situation.
And it's also like, let's just say the situation came out again for somebody and they did it and they took it on and it's over. When you talk about the project, you don't talk about yourself and like how you directed it. You talk about the story. You talk about the people that it's representing. You uplift those people that are more marginalized than you. Not that it's a competition, but I'm saying like, for if you post about it, for example, you talk about how the story needs to be heard and you were just glad to be a part of it. You make it about the people that need to be talked about rather than your great experience. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's not a selfish endeavor. It's being a true ally means using your platform and your abilities to raise up others that are not as privileged as you are, and whether that means working on a project for them or bring attention to their cause, that being a true ally just means like raising them up. And if that means working on something for them, that's good, but just make sure that's the goal, not you.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I got so enraged when Lena Dunham posted about the Syria thing that she was doing because it was all about me, me, me. It was like, I'm so honored to be chosen for this amazing story. I can't wait to do this or whatever. It was all about like me. I've been chosen. Not like this is a conflict that's very serious that has never been talked about, that I've never used my platform to bring attention to it. You know what I mean? So there's you can do it right. And I think I'm just glad we have this like smart listener on our side. You know, she's a smarty, smart whitey.
Smart whitey.
And I also like that she said fellow queer woman director, because I was like, oh, she means me. That's not making me feel good. Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, this is gonna be old, another one. But by the time this comes out, the article will already be like out for a long time. But me and Anna had already been written about in Voyage LA like a couple months ago, and I just got mine the day after my birthday.
Yeah,
so that was cool. So go to Voyage LA and read about Anna and I.
Yeah, we're in the, what is it, Inspiring Stories?
Inspiring Stories.
Yeah, check it out. It was fun.
Yeah.
Shireen's interview is great.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm like, my throat's weird. This one's going to be a little shorter. We got to go. We got shit to do, y'all.
We got
shit
Reza. We got to welcome Reza into our arms.
And I have a writing deadline. I have to send a bunch of shit over right now. So I need some time before Reza gets here. You guys, never ending work.
It's life.
Yes. So thank you for listening. You can find me at Anna Hosnier.
And you can find me at Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter. You can find us at EthnicallyAmb, A-M-B on Twitter, and EthnicallyAmbig, A-M-B on Instagram. We have a website, EthnicallyAmbiguousPod.com. We also have a merch site. We have a merch site, tpublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. There's shirts, there's mugs, there's pillows, there's notebooks, computer cases, phone cases, there's so many things, stickers, posters, so go support us, get something and post about it, and we'll repost it. So yeah, and write us a 5-star review, please. Spread the word, give us a review.
Five stars, no less. All right, are you doing my dance?
I bet that is.